My guest is economist Chris Thornburg, founding partner, Beacon Economics, an independent research and consulting firm. We initially met when Chris Thornburg headed the economic forecast at UCLA, and he'd visit Santa Barbara to speak at UCSB's economic forecast events more than once. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, economist Chris Thornburg.
Nice to be here, Mark.
Thank you so much for carving out some time and looking over your website, beaconecon.com. Your plate is very full, and you've been writing, and we're going to talk a little bit about housing costs and its impact on the economy. Very much looking forward to hearing what you have to say. I appreciate you carving out some time. And before we came on the air, Chris said he was born in upstate New York, and you said, the last thing you said, we had to cut off, you said it was so far west that you think of yourself more as a part of Cleveland than New York?
Right. When you think of Rochester or Buffalo, you're talking more the kind of Midwest Rust Belt that extends really across the Great Lakes, more than I think the kind of more coastal Philadelphia, New York, Boston kind of a cultural climate, as the case may be.
It's very true. Does that mean you were rooting for LeBron James?
I wouldn't go that far. I've been out in California half my life now, so I'm officially a Golden State kind of guy. So, of course, had a soft spot for the Warriors.
All right. Well, I'm right there with you. And I grew up in New York and was rooting for the New York Knicks for the longest time, but kind of morphed out here as well.
Yeah.
I read an article where you were quoted as saying home costs driving people to leave the state. It was written by a guy named Andrew Corey?
Right. Andrew Corey, yeah, that's, of course, from the L.A. Times.
And you believe high housing costs in California is having a very serious effect on the economy's ability to grow, a serious threat to growth.
Yeah.
So why is that your position?
Well, look, first of all, let's be careful about that, right? High housing costs are causing some people to leave the state. You know, on net, there are still more people moving into the state than out of the state, but the numbers are relatively small. Net migration over the last few years is running about 0.25%. To put that in context, in the 70s and 80s, California's population every year, about net migration into the state added about 1% to population growth, so we're not even a fifth of what we were. Now, the reason this is of issue, well, let's take a look at what's going on in the state right now. As good as things are, and I mean, you go through a litany of indicators, output growth, non-residential permits, vacancy rates on commercial property, taxable sales trends, you look at all these numbers, and California continues to be one of the strongest economies in the United States. Yet despite all that strength, there has been a distinct slowing of job growth. A couple years ago, the state was adding about 3% to its payrolls on an annual basis. That is now dropped below 2%. And the reason for the slowdown in job growth can be traced to one other statistic, the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate in California right now is modestly above 4%. That's the lowest the unemployment rate has ever been in the state of California. So think of that for a second. We have never seen such a tight labor market as we are experiencing right now. And, of course, when you ask, well, why aren't more people moving here if there's all these job opportunities, the answer, again, boils down to housing, housing, housing.
Yeah, I was reading my guest, Chris Thornburg, founder of Beacon Economics. You can find him on beaconecon.com. And there was an article in the LA Times, and it was just talking about the commutes that people have to put up with to keep a good-paying job and be able to afford to live somewhere. It's just, it's hard to imagine.
It's bad. But yeah, I think that thinking of this as purely a commuting standpoint is a little bit misleading as well. So take here in Southern California, L.A., Orange County, San Diego have regularly relied on the Inland Empire as sort of a housing market for their workers, as the case may be. But what's interesting is even the Inland Empire right now has the lowest level of unemployment ever seen out there. So it's not even a function now where the problem is, gee, we have to import people from farther away. Even those farther away places are running out of bodies. So it's a little bit more intense than even what a long drive can fix.
The housing, we've been behind building housing for years. I mean, when I moved in 77 and got into real estate in 88, and the mantra has always been housing crisis. Has there ever been a time in California when there wasn't a housing crisis?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, look, the late 80s was the last big housing boom in California. Phenomenal amount of new permits were being put in line in the latter part of the 1980s. Of course, we went through that very difficult early 90s period. Part of that cyclical, driven by the early 90s downturn, part of it structural, by the beginning of sort of deindustrialization heavy manufacturing parts of California. But by the time we emerged out of that into the late 90s, the seeds for the housing crunch had been laid. And it's really since the late 90s, about 20 years now, that the housing market has really failed to respond to housing needs in the state's economy.
Why?
Well, there's a lot of different reasons there, and of course you can easily point to some of the favorite culprits. You have NIMBYism, driven forward, of course, by the boomers, who want California to stay the same. You could talk about CEQA and how that's been malused in many different circumstances. You could talk about downzoning. You could talk about permits. But in the end, for me, I am going to go back to something very simple, which is financial incentives. You know, when you think about California, we are we have a lot of cities in this state. Simple as that, right? I mean, you think of L.A. County with 10 million people in 88 cities. That we have this enormous plethora of these small areas that like to sort of do some self-governing. But here's the big issue. When you start thinking about these local economies, these local cities, you have to understand that from a pure planning perspective, housing, particularly multifamily housing, these are fiscal losers. If you talk to any city manager and kind of go through their books, they'll explain to you that the residents of their city contribute maybe 25% on the outside, maybe 30% of the revenues. But, of course, those same residents will account for 75 to 80% of all expenses. They rely on businesses to pay the bills for the residents that exist there. Well, what that means is that every time you build a residential unit, the cost-benefit analysis on that is not good. And, in fact, the lower the cost of the housing, the worse that cost-benefit analysis gets. Down to, of course, the point of affordable and or workforce housing, this is the worst of the worst. This will clearly cause fiscal losses for that particular city. Now, we also exist in a period of time where the cost of pensions in the state continue to skyrocket. All these cities are facing, even in the midst of an incredibly hot economy, are facing various levels of fiscal distress, largely because of their pension obligations. And it's not unsurprising, then, that cities really push back. They just don't want housing.
I love the way you brought up the myriad of local municipalities.
Yeah.
That, and before we move away from what you just said, I do want to remind me to ask you about the recent laws where they were trying to pass and put more central state California forcing local municipalities to encourage them and enforce them to build higher density. But to just backpedal a little bit, you mentioned some of the reasons for the housing market having been failed in the last 20 years. And you mentioned NIMBYism. And for those that don't know, that's not in my backyard, where people don't want density and everything built next to them. And then you mentioned CEQA, which is the environmental regulations that stop building, even though they want to build. And so you mentioned the financial incentive with the local municipalities and cost of pensions and yeah, it's like it's a losing proposition. Everybody wants commercials and Costco's and Walmart's and big developments to get the tax revenue, and then that'll pay for the housing. But do we have enough land? We have enough land, but nobody wants urban sprawl. I mean, there's tons of land in California if people just want to build there.
But be careful, because you just said something that actually is a little bit of an oxymoron, because you said the word, sprawl and then land in the same sentence. And in a sense, the underutilization of land within what I would call our urban cores has led directly to the sprawl problem. So sprawl is really driven by the fact that the core urban areas in California, whether it's San Mateo, coastal Orange County, West LA, you know, these regions have a degree of business activity and population that there should be massive waves of density going on, where they're just tearing out single-family neighborhoods and putting up, apartment neighborhoods, tower neighborhoods, the way that normal cities do across the world.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, we are not seeing that at all. That's where these fights are most ferocious, and that in turn leads to the sprawl. You know, that goes back to, I think, one of the biggest myths of this entire conversation, because you talk to people who don't want housing, and invariably, they always end up in this place where they say, well, I don't want more housing because I don't need the traffic. There's already too much traffic. And I point out to them, you have it exactly backwards. The reason the highways are so damn full is because of the fact we don't build enough housing close to jobs. We don't have enough housing in West LA. We don't have enough housing next to San Francisco and San Mateo and Marin. As because we don't build housing where we should have housing, the net result of that is we end up building housing very far away, thus filling up the highway with those people making the hour, an hour and a half commute. So we've made the traffic. The traffic is not the problem. The traffic is a symptom of the problems.
And then, of course, other people will also say we don't have the water. My guest, Chris Thornburg, is a founding partner of Beacon Economics. You can find him on beaconecon.com. He's got a lot going on with on his calendar, mostly down in the L.A. area. But if you go online, you'll find seminars that he's doing June 21st in Whittier, July 19th in Newport Beach, August 1st. In Los Angeles, August 9th.
Well, we do a lot of work in the Bay Area as well. So, I appreciate that. Yeah, the water conversation to me, I again find just it's almost laughably ridiculous comment to make. Agriculture in our state is 2% of the economy, and yet it currently uses 80% of the water.
Thank you.
It's just the idea we don't have enough water for growth in this state is just so silly.
Well, who's gonna take the water away from agriculture?
Well, that's a separate question, right? Look, there's two things that we have to talk about. One is what are the actual problems, and then two is how to fix them. The actual problem with water is not that there's not enough of it. The actual problem with water is that we use it very poorly. Now, how you fix that is a whole separate idea. And yes, I understand that the politics around ag, the politics around ag water is very intense. But just because that's a problem, the politics there is a problem, doesn't mean it's not the underlying issue here is not a function of water supply. It's a function of our political inability to put in place common sense solutions.
Well, and what people see locally is the local water districts forcing people to conserve and then charging a drought surcharge equal to the water usage. And everyone sees housing being built up, and the allocation, as you put it, is the problem. You know, let's say there is plenty of water, but my goodness, who's going to challenge the ag community and say, well, guess what? You can't use, what is it, 2 gallons of water to grow one almond or something crazy, 1 gallon?
Well, first of all, I would not actually use the nut guys as the primary
culprit
here, because while it is true they use a certain degree of water, at the same time, that's actually a high-value crop. The stuff that I find truly obnoxious is hay. You know, they look at Imperial County, and it's just miles and miles and miles and miles of hay fields. Hay is an incredibly cheap crop that uses a phenomenal amount of water. They grow in the middle of the desert. You can't even believe the amount of water that gets dumped into those fields. But then it gets even worse than that. You know what they do with that hay? They have so much hay, we literally put it on boats and we ship it to Korea and Japan and China to feed livestock. We feed, in the middle of a drought, we will grow hay in the desert and we feed Chinese horses with it. I mean, really? But it's incredible. It's incredible.
Well, I mean, yeah, we hear all these stories. I haven't heard that one in particular. That's alarming.
Oh, yeah.
Getting back to what you said about the myths and too much traffic, people, you know, gets back to NIMBYism. I mean, people don't want this high density. One of the state goals on that law that kind of got beat down, but I don't think it's dead yet, was they wanted to allow, you know, multi-story, high-density housing near train stations and bus stations.
I know. You're talking about Wiener's, got SB, what was it, 370-something or else. Yeah. Well, it got shot down this time. He claims he's going to try again next year. But, it's we're running around building light rail. And then we spend billions of dollars on to put in a line with a light rail station. And then what do? It's this light rail station will be in the middle of a single-family neighborhood, and we don't change it. Well, I'm sorry, what? I mean, everybody will tell you, if you want light rail to work, you have to it basically has to connect high-density residential zones with high-density job zones. If you're connecting single-family single-family areas to dense job zones, it's a waste of money. It's not going to work. It's just not going to work.
Well, the way California evolved, and when you earlier said, because I mentioned land and sprawl, and you kind of said it was a little bit of an oxymoron, you look at New York City, which started on a narrow strip of land in the island, not Long Island, but the island of Manhattan, and they started with high density, and they started with the subways, and but my goodness, there's tons of traffic there, and they have all the density you'd want. They haven't solved the traffic problem.
At least light rail is more effective in New York than it is in L.A. right now. They have problems with light rail in New York, at subways in New York, but the problems have everything to do with the city's inability to say no to the unions. I mean, they just built up like a 2-mile extension of one of the lines, and it was like 20 times more expensive than any mile of light rail built in any city in the world. Like, it's just crazy how inefficiently they do it. But again, that's a political issue, not an economic issue. You know, and everybody has to keep that in mind. But you know what city I like to look at? I not too long ago, I flew into Toronto, Canada. And, you know, the Canadians know urban planning. They're very good at it. And you fly into Toronto, which is getting close to 6 million people. It's growing very rapidly. It's a great city, lots of great jobs, good things happening. You fly in, and you will see, you'll see the big downtown area, big sprawling, big buildings everywhere. And then stemming from there, you will see, it's like almost like hot, like spokes on a wheel. And you will see this kind of lines leaving downtown. You'll see little clusters of tall buildings. And every one of those clusters in kind of a straight line leading from downtown is a light rail station. And every one of those clusters of tall buildings is around one of the light rails. And that's exactly how it's supposed to work. And here we are spending billions and millions of dollars on light rail across California, and yet at the same time, we allow zoning that inherently undermines all the money we're putting into it. It's just crazy.
The local zoning. So the idea of a master plan, if someone was in charge,
yeah,
it could be fixed.
You got to get rid of local zoning. I mean, there's two ways of doing it. Either you change incentives for local governments want housing, or two, you take the decision away from them completely. And, you know, that's, you know, I know in California a lot of people go crazy over that, but, you know, Japan had an enormous housing problem. And the government solution over there was to take away local authority. And in Japan, as a result of the removal of local authority, there was a huge surge in new housing construction in Japan. And housing is more affordable in Japan today by a good margin than it was 15 years ago because of that basic decision. So whenever I talk about housing, you know, everybody always wants to divert and talk about affordability, and I keep telling people, affordability is a symptom of the problem. The solution here is not to tackle affordability. The solution is one thing and one thing only, and that's increasing supply, period.
My guest, Chris Thornburg, founding partner of Beacon Economics. You can find him at beaconecon.com. We're going to take a commercial break. We're going to come back, and to wrap this up, the final question is, you know, is there the political will to really change the landscape of California and get rid of not in my backyard and get rid of local zoning and just take this as a blueprint from architects and economists who will design a successful city. The question is, how many people will vote for that? I mean, there'll be a riot in California. It's a tough one. Mark Schneibman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.